Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
It's such an honor and a blessing to each week be able to talk to the great historian Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com and see what's on his mind and talk about one of his great tidbits that has come out. This episode, we get that opportunity again as we go back in time and talk about over 100 years ago how the kicking game was in football with Timothy Brown from footballarchaeology.com coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to Tuesday, Football Archaeology Day, as we bring in our friend Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Great to see you, hear from you again, and looking forward to lots of Tuesdays during 2022 or 2023, I should 2023, say.
As I say, we already did a bunch for 2022. Yeah.
Old habits.
It's hard to change that date, isn't it? That's one of the toughest things to do. We'll be doing that into March, I'm sure, all of us.
Hey,
we have had a great football season. We've had some great Tuesdays on football archaeology. You know, we shared a lot of Rose Bowl memories with you. And, now we got it in some of your interesting tidbits that we're getting into from November. And one that really caught my eye is you had one titled from November 14th called Punting Early and Often, about some early football strategy. We'd really like to hear about it.
Yeah. I think for me, this is kind of a fun topic, for two reasons. I think, one is just kind of the nature of punting was a much bigger part of the game, back then. But for me, it also, I think, just generally, and in line with that thought, it kind of just reinforces, when we're going back and doing history and reading about things that have happened in the past, it can be very difficult to make sure you have, you're wearing their hat. And what I mean by that is, you're working under the assumptions they worked under, not the assumptions you now work under, because 100 years or 120, some years have passed. And so, the point of the overall article is just kind of discussing how back in the day, teams often punted on first or second down. And then once, they got four downs, then they would punt on third down too. But and for us, that seems like just such a strange way to play the game, right? It's like, why in the heck would you punt on first down? And yet it's, if you kind of put yourself back under their assumptions and under their rules, then it starts making a bit more sense. And so, in my mind, there's two kind of key things that, that are different about the game that they played versus what's played today. And so one is just that people punted early on or on early downs because it was difficult to move the ball. pretty much everybody with the, exceptions here and there, but pretty much everybody played close formations, with three or four backs, inside the both ends being tight. Sometimes there'd be a wing or, whatever it was. But I mean, for the most part, everybody's playing really tight together. And then the defense has had a wide guy on either side to stop anybody from sweeping. So everything just got funneled into the middle. And so it was just hard to move the darn ball and to do it consistently. So it's one thing to get a first down. It's another thing that, you know, string together five, six, seven first downs, drive down the field and score. So, you know, it's just that, that whole idea that the, in a game of reasonably well-matched opponents, it typically was going to be a pretty low-scoring game. You know, they did not have Yale and Harvard or Yale and Princeton or whomever, Michigan and Chicago. Or when they played one another, they didn't play a bunch of 47 to 43 games. You know, it was 13 to 10. It was 6-0. So just, you know, the fact of the matter is, against well-matched teams, it was really difficult to move the ball. So they played the field position game, and they booted it, right? And they booted it thinking, hey, I'm going to have keep the ball in their territory, and then they can make a mistake, and then I can capitalize on it. And so this particular article has a quote by a guy named George Brook, who was a famous player and coach back then, and you know, wrote a lot of articles that were in you know, syndicated newspaper articles. But he basically made an argument that a maxim, he called it, that if the ball is inside your 40, you should punt it. That's it. Right? Which is like, you know, again, one of those things we just can't even imagine. And so it, just the way that he phrased it, I've got it here. So he considered if you were inside your own 40, you considered dangerous ground. And he said, this is called dangerous ground because if the team should lose the ball for some foul or offside play, fumble, or other common means of losing it, then, you know, then their goal is going to be in danger. So it's kind of the reverse of what I was saying is why you want to punt it. But it just points out that, you know, so our assumptions are offenses can move the ball. And then the other assumption, you know, we understand fumbles or interceptions or something like that, losing the ball, but we don't think about it in terms of the first thing he meant is some foul or offside play. So back then, most penalties resulted in a loss of possession, you know? So, you know, yes, there was, you know, if you interfered with the center, 5-yard penalty, piling on, or a couple other things were 15-yard penalties, but an offside, if you were offside, loss of possession, right? And then, like, you know, the forward pass, before the forward pass was legalized, you know, if you pitched the ball forward, that was loss of possession, you know, was another example of that. So, again, it's just we don't think about the game that way. We don't think about, you know, jumping offside, boom, the other guy gets the ball at the spot, you know, so. So, you know, there was just, I think, that much more reason, you know, you were risking yourself and your field position if you kept the ball and you were, you know, inside the 30, inside the 40, whatever it was. So anyways, it just kind of makes more sense now. Or, you know, if you kind of think about those two terms, you know, the offensive inefficiency and then loss of possession. So, I don't know, just interesting to me.
Yeah, it made me start really thinking about it, you know, especially before the forward pass was legal. You know, we talk now, you know, we watch a game and they say, oh, you know, the defense has 8 in the box or they're stop the run. Well, they were putting, you know, 10, 11 in the box back then. There was no threat behind them to that. So they could fill every gap and have an extra guy to shoot the gaps if they wanted to. So probably made moving the ball on the ground real ineffective. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it, you know, there's so many things that we just take for granted, obviously the forward pass, but just other ways of just moving the, you know, trying to move the ball, you know, just like I guess a shovel pass would have been illegal then anyways, but, you know, option plays and those kinds of things, it just, you know, hadn't come along yet. So it was tough.
Yeah, well, it's definitely that article and some of the photographs, the pictures you have in there, and you know, Mr. Brooks' quotes and things that really makes you think and takes you back, you know, 120 some years ago, and appreciate how the game has evolved over time and made it a lot more enjoyable from a fan's point of view, and probably from an offensive and defensive strategist too. Might make some headaches for them too, for the defenses with the forward pass
yeah.
and stuff. But hey, just some great stuff and how important the kicking game was at that point. It really comes to light. So we thank you for sharing that with us. And Tim, why don't we take this time? You know, you have these tidbits coming out each and every day. Maybe you could share with the listeners how they too can appreciate your tidbits each day.
Sure. My site where I post the tidbits every day is called footballarchaeology.com. It's a site where you can just sign up for free, and you'll get an email delivered every night at 7 o'clock Eastern. I also post on Twitter, but just to, you know, if you want to make sure you get it every day, you don't have to read it necessarily, but if you want to make sure you get it every day, just subscribe and it'll plop right into your inbox dutifully.
It most certainly does. So, Tim, we appreciate you coming on again. Again, Timothy P. Brown, footballarchaeology.com. And Tim, we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.